Welcome back to our Tanakh Study Center series on Sefer Shmuel. Today's shiur will be the first of two shiurim on the unit from Perek Het to Yud Bet, from chapters 8 to 12. In our first shiur, we're going to discuss why these five prakim form a unit. Then we'll come to explain why this unit is more about David HaMelech than about Shmuel himself. As you recall, our theme in our series on Sefer Shmuel will focus on the prophetic purpose of the book, and we will show how the purpose of the book is to tell the reader about the kingdom of David. As we said, the book is more about David than it is about Shmuel. And then we will focus a little bit on the signs that Shmuel gives Shaul to let him know that he'll become king. And we'll talk a little bit about Kevar Rachel, because it's also Parshat Vayechi this week and relates to Parshat HaShavua. Let's begin with the technical side. We saw at the end of Perek Zayin how the last three psukim summarized the time period of Shmuel and how Shmuel was a very successful shofet and how he was different than all the other shoftim who preceded him. In Perek Het, the main topic is going to be the request of the people to have a king. Therefore, we're going to define our unit from Perek Het to Yud Bet, Bakashat Melech, the request of a king, as Perek Het itself is the people's request for a king. Perek Tet is how Shaul finds Shmuel. Perek Yud are the signs how he first becomes king. And then Perek Yud Aleph is going to prove himself as a king in his battle against Bnei Ammon. And finally, in Perek Yud Bet, after Shaul receives much more popularity, Shmuel is going to re-anoint the king and re-coronate the king in a public ceremony in Gilgal. And in that ceremony, which will be our main topic of this unit, Shmuel will clarify to the people exactly the challenges facing the establishment of a melucha. In the end of Perek Yud Bet, the monarchy is established, Shaul is accepted by the entire nation, and simply to prove that the unit ends with Perek Yud Bet, if you look quickly at Perek Yud Gimel, the opening line, Ben Shana Shoba Macho Shtei Shanim Malach, Perek Yud Gimel is going to begin a unit called Machut Shaul, which will be the kingdom of Shaul itself, and that will focus already on Shaul as a king. Therefore, Prakim Chet Yud Bet form a unit which we call Bakashat Melech, the request of a king. And now we have to go and study that unit and try to understand what is its prophetic point and how it's going to add information and insight into what the reader is supposed to learn in his understanding of the establishment of a melucha for the people of Israel. If someone read only Perek Het, you would definitely reach the conclusion that the Navi Shmuel is against establishing a monarchy. The people come to Shmuel in Pasuk Dalet. There it says, "Vaykabtzu kol ziknei Yisrael vayavol Shmuel haramata." All the elders of Israel come to Shmuel, to a city in Ramah, in Har Ephraim, and they tell him, "Hinei ata zakanta, you're getting old," which implies, had Shmuel been able to live forever, then they wouldn't mind Shmuel leading the people. But Shmuel isn't living forever. Ubanecha lo hulchu b'drachecha, your sons are not following your ways, and therefore it doesn't make sense for them to take over for you. That's why the first three psukim talk about how Shmuel's own sons, even though they were appointed judges in Beersheba, they themselves were corrupt, took bribery and slanted justice. And sadly enough, the people reached the conclusion that Shmuel himself cannot begin a family dynasty of leadership, and it's time to change the system of government. In his response in Pasuk Vav, the Navi tells us, "Vayera hadavar b'nei Shmuel kasher amru tnu lanu melech l'shofteinu." Shmuel saw this in a very negative light when they asked for a king, and Shmuel turns to God. Surprisingly enough, Hashem tells Shmuel, listen to them. But even though you should listen to them, before you appoint a king for them, warn them what is called Mishpat HaMelech, the rights of the king that they're about to accept upon themselves. Before we discuss those details, I want to review what we talked about in our short series on Sefer Shoftim in regard to the two sides of having a king, if a king is good or bad. To review that point, I want to return to the phrase in Pasuk Hey, when the people ask for a king, there's two ways you can understand the phrase kechol hagoyim. To accent those differences, I will present them as follows. We could say kechol hagoyim or kechol hagoyim, and I'll explain what I mean. Kechol hagoyim means we want a king, not necessarily a king, the person, but a kingdom, a system of government, a monarchy. If we say a melech kechol hagoyim, that can be understood as, we want to change our system of government. We want a strong central government. We want stability. We want someone we can trust. We don't want to have to worry about who's going to be our leader 10 years from now, 20 years from now. We want to prepare a royal family. We want to make sure that our country is being run by competent people. And with all its potential dangers, there's definitely something positive about establishing a monarchy. One could say that in modern day times, our forms of government have advanced, but there's definitely room to appreciate the establishment of a monarchy, especially in contrast to anarchy. Another way to understand the phrase is what I like to call kachol agoyim, meaning not what type of institution of government we want, but what type of king do we want? Do we want what we would call a goyish king? Do we want a king who acts like a goy? In other words, when the people are asking for a king, are they asking for political reform in order to make Am Yisrael a better country, in order to better enable them to represent God as a nation? Or are the people of Israel running away from God and saying, we don't want to be God's people, we want to be a nation like every other nation? If you want to take a modern day analogy, when the early Zionists began with a dream of establishing a new state of Israel, was their goal saying, we don't want to be a Jewish nation anymore, we don't want to live like they did in Europe, and we want to be identified as religious Jews, we want to run away from that, establish a new type of society, we want to be a nation like every other nation, and act in a similar way, we want to be part of European culture, of Western culture, whatever you might call it? Or are the people of Israel saying, we want to establish a nation like every other nation has, but we're going to be a special nation, we're going to have a higher set of values, we're going to take upon ourselves the challenge of representing God as a nation. We're going to take upon ourselves the challenge of being a light to other nations. So if I return to the people's request, are the people asking for a king, kechol hagoyim, in essence asking for political reform for the betterment of the people of Israel? Or are they asking kechol hagoyim, we want to act like non-Jews, we don't want to be a special nation representing God? It seems like that Shmuel understood the latter, that the people are looking to run away from God, and that's why he's so angry. God answers them, and that we explained in our search series on Sefer Shoftim, God answers them, give them a king anyhow. It could be they're asking for the wrong reason, but it's your job now, Shmuel, in your final years of leadership, it's your job not only to appoint a king, but we're going to see it'll be Shmuel's job to guide the king and establish a kingdom that will, on the one hand, reform the political system and enable the Jewish people to establish a proper state, but at the same time, to make sure that the person who's going to run that kingdom, that person will have the proper character that will enable the Jewish people to improve their ability to serve God. As we'll see in our study of the book, the ideal character and the leader who is going to fulfill that goal will ultimately be David HaMelech, but the process begins with the appointment of Shaul. And in many ways, in our study of Sefer Shmuel, we're going to see how the book will focus more on the negative aspects of Shaul's character in order to appreciate the positive aspects of David's character, which makes him king over Shaul. That doesn't mean that, historically speaking, Shaul didn't have a chance to be a good king, but in prophetic and historic hindsight, the book is coming to explain why specifically David HaMelech was chosen. As we continue our study of Sefer Shmuel, we're going to see how that theme is going to become prevalent in each of the units which we're going to discuss. Let's return now to our discussion in Perachet. After Hashem tells Shmuel to appoint a king, but first warn them what the Navi calls Mishpat HaMelech, let's take a quick look at what this Mishpat HaMelech entails and see if it's something negative or positive. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Ze Yeh Mishpat HaMelech. Shmuel tells the people in God's name, if you want to appoint a king and establish a kingdom, here's the price you're going to have to pay. Your king is going to take your sons and conscript them to his army. He will make them officers. He's going to take your daughters and make them bakers and cooks. He's going to take your fields and take the produce. He's going to tax you. He's going to take everything good that you have and take it for himself. When you look at this list, it looks like this king is going to be really selfish and only caring about himself. But it doesn't necessarily have to be understood that way. If the people want a king to establish a strong central government and a strong nation, then we're not talking about things that the king needs for his own personal gain. We're talking about things that the king needs in order to establish a strong kingdom. And when he's going to tax you and conscript your sons, it's not for his own wealth. Rather, it's for the good of the nation. And if the king indeed does these things, what the Navi calls Mishpat HaMelech, for the good of the nation, then there's nothing wrong with it. On the other hand, if he does it for himself, then that may be something negative. We will see that it'll be the job of the Navi to make sure that the king, when he does acquire all that power, to make sure that he channels that power for the good of the people of Israel and not just for his own self-wealth, what Shmuel is telling the people, appointing a king has a price tag. The people tell Shmuel, we understand. Instead they say, we want a king. And listen how they summarize their statement in Pasach Chaf. Vayinu gam anachnu kechol agoyim, ushpatanu malkeinu v'yatza lefaneinu v'nechamet mechamateinu. What is the main interest of the people? We want a king. We're willing to pay the price. We're willing to give our sons to serve in the army. We're willing to pay our taxes. We're willing to give him the fields that he needs, the resources he needs, but we want someone to lead us in battle. We can't take this situation where we're constantly in battle and there's no one to lead us against our enemies. To prove my point that the people are not rebelling against God here and not really rebelling against Shmuel at all, simply take a look at Perek Tet and what happens in the beginning of Perek Yud. If the people were rebelling against Shmuel, they would tell Shmuel, you've been our shofet, very nice, good job, you're getting old, bye-bye. We'll take care of ourselves now. Instead, the people give total trust in Shmuel to appoint the king. That's why God instructs Shmuel to find them a king. And the people are willing to go home. Shmuel sends them home afterwards and wait and be patient. And Shmuel tells them, go home. The very end of Perechet. Vayomer Shmuel anshei Yisrael luchu ish liro. After God tells him appoint a king, he sends people home. It's implicit here. He's telling them, go home. And the time will come and I'll call you back. I'll find a king, we'll make a search committee, and we'll find a king. That proves, in my opinion, that the people here are not really rebelling against God. The people are simply troubled in a difficult situation, and it's actually rather praiseworthy of the people that they put their trust in Shmuel to appoint a king. The story in Perek Tet, we're not going to discuss in Iyun at all. You're probably familiar with the story where Shaul is looking for his atonot. He's lost, and in a rather haphazard way, he finds Shmuel. If we remember that back in Perek Gimel, we were told that all of Israel from Dan to Beersheba knows that Shmuel is a Navi Neman Lashem. Everyone's heard about how great and trustworthy Shmuel is. One of the few people who really don't know Shmuel at all is Shaul himself. When he's looking for his Atonot, his Nar, his young little helper, who's helping him search for the Atonot, he's heard about Shmuel, but Shaul himself had no idea about him, and when he bumps into him, towards the end of Perek Tet, Shaul had no idea who Shmuel was. If you want to take a quick look in Perek Tet, in Pasuk Yud Chet, it says, Vayigash Shaul Shmuel b'toch hashar, v'yomer hagina nali, eze beit haroe. Shaul just happens to bump into Shmuel, as they come into the city, and he asks him, do you know where's the house of the roe? And Shmuel answers him, v'yomer anochi haroe, I'm the person you're looking for. It's clear that Shaul had no idea who Shmuel was. We're going to see, as our study continues, that the person who's chosen first to become king, Shaul, is almost the person you wouldn't expect for the job. Why that is, we'll discuss as our share continues. In Perek Yud, we have a description of three signs that Shmuel gives Shaul when he leaves. First, he takes the Pach HaShemen, saying, God has appointed you, anointed you, on his Nachala to be a Nagid. In Pasuk Aleph, in Perek Yud, Vayikach Shmuel et Pach HaShemen, Vayitzok al Rosho, Vayishakehu, Vayomer, Haloki Meshachacha Hashem, Al Nachlato LeNagid. Notice, he didn't say the word Melech. A Nagid is like a leader. We're going to find that word a lot in Sefer Shmuel. A Nagid may have the potential to become one day a king. But pay attention that Shmuel himself never tells Shaul at this point that you're going to become a king, you're going to be a Nagid. If you go back in Perek Tet, when God first told Shmuel about Shaul coming to visit him, then Hashem tells Shmuel in Pasuk Tet Zayin in Perek Tet, Ke'et machar ashlach elecha ish meretz binyamin, umashachto lenagid al ami Yisrael. God tells him, appoint him as a nagid, as a leader over the people of Israel. Voshiet amim yad plishtim. What will he do? He will save my people from the plishtim. Ki ra'iti et ami, ki bat zakato elai. God's giving Shmuel a very different reason why he's going to appoint Shaul. Just like we saw in Sefer Shoftim, God feels sorry for his people. They're crying out to him for help. And the people of Israel need a military leader. God is already telling Shmuel, I have the perfect military leader for the Jewish people. I see the person with the potential. He'll be Shaul. He's going to come and see you tomorrow. Afterwards, he tells him as follows. In Perek Yud Pasuk Bet, B'lechtecha hayom yimadi. We're returning now to what Shmuel is telling Shaul, what will happen to him, as a sign from God that he is indeed appointed to become the leader of the people. Lechdecha hayomi madi, as Shaul will leave Shmuel's palace in Har Ephraim. Umatzat shnei anashim im kvrat Rachel bikvu Binyamin betzeltzach. Damru elecha nimtzu atonot asher alachta lavakesh v'nei natash avicha divrei atonot v'da'ag lechem lemor ma'aseh livni. What does he tell him? When you leave me, you're going to bump into two people, and you'll meet them at Kever Rachel, at the border of Binyamin. We'll discuss possibly later, from a geographical point of view, where this spot is. We're going to talk about this point more from a thematic perspective. And then the next sign, V'chalafta misham, in Pasuk Gimel, you'll leave there, and you'll go to a place called Elon Tavor, and there you're going to find, U'matzuch Hashem, Shlosha Anashim, Olim El Ha'alohim, Beit El, Echad Nosei Shlosha Gdi'im, V'Echad Nosei Shloshet Kikrot Lechem, V'Echad Nosei Nevel Yayin. You're going to bump into three people this time, on the way to Beit El, carrying an animal, apparently for a korban, and carrying some bread and some wine. If you remember Malki Tzedek, when he goes to meet Avram Avinu, after Avram was successful in his battle against the four kings, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem Hevi Lechem V'Yayin, V'u Kohen El Elyon, Malki Tzedek, who was then a type of a priest at that time, in order to greet the new king, who just conquered and just brought salvation to the people of Canaan, then it was Avram Avinu, bringing lechem and yain as a sign of recognition and thanks to a leader we saw already in Sefer Bereshit. And here, interestingly enough, they bring lechem and yain to the person who's going to ultimately become the king. The third sign, l'chachak tevo givat Elohim asher sham nitzivei plishtim, v'ikavocha sham v'upagata v'chevel nevi'im yordim mi'abama v'lifneim neva v'tov v'chalel v'chinor v'hima mitnabim. Afterwards, you're going to come to another place called Givat Elohim, and there you're going to bump into a set of Nevi'im, what I like to call B'nai Nevi'im, similar today to yeshiva students, people dedicating their life to study Torah and connecting to God. There, you'll be at a place which is being guarded and under the control of Plishtim, which again proves our point that the Plishtim have military dominance over the people. And even in places where most of the population is Jewish, there's still a military presence of the Plishtim, even in the hills of Binyamin. That will be the last time when that happens, and then you're going to have Ruach Hashem will meet you there, and the rest will become history. If we look at this story, we have Meshicha with Pach HaShemen, and then we have Kever Rachel, and then we have Beit El. If you remember from Sefer Breshit, all of those elements we find in the story of Yaakov Avinu, when he returns to the land of Israel, coming from Padan Aram, he returns to Beit El. There, he puts Shemen on the very same matzeva which he had erected when he left Eretz Yisrael to go to Aram, back in Parsha Vayetze. There, he made a monument, he made a matzeva to remember to come back to this place. And then when, upon his return, he returns to that matzeva, he puts Shemen on it, and he calls the place Beit El. Immediately afterwards, in Perek Lamed Hei, in Sefer Breshit, is a story of Rachel's death. In my opinion, that can't be by chance, that this Pach HaShemen and Kever Rachel, the death of Rachel, and the Matzeva, if you remember in Perek Lamed Hei and Breshit, Yaakov Avinu makes a Matzeva on the spot which he hopes one day to build a house for God, and he also puts up a Matzeva not far away from there, on the spot where Rachel dies. And now, a descendant of Rachel, Rachel's child, who is born exactly that time when Rachel dies, after Yaakov's visit to Beit El, upon his return to Israel, exactly then, Rachel dies and gives birth to Binyamin. It's a descendant now from Shevet Binyamin, an Ish Yemini, who's going to become the first king for this new monarchy of the Jewish people. It's not within the framework of this series to go into the Iyun, into the in-depth meaning of each point. I simply want to talk about one thematic perspective which relates to our discussion of Sefer Shmuel and the establishment of a kingdom, as we discussed in our previous shiurim. In our discussion of Tfilat Chana, we talked about this turnaround in Jewish history, where things were so difficult and bad, and everything's falling apart, and now, right before we've reached what we refer to as rock bottom, something's going to turn around, and the Jewish people are going to return, and slowly begin the rise to redemption. This process begins with Tfilat Chana, with Chana's prayer. The person who's going to begin the process and practice will be the Navi Shmuel, who reestablishes credibility to Jewish leadership at that time. And ultimately, Shmuel will appoint and establish a kingdom, first with Shaul and ultimately with David. If you remember the story of Yaakov Avinu, when Yaakov Avinu first comes to Beit El and calls the site Beit El and puts up a matzeva, the situation that Yaakov Avinu was in was very similar in Sefer Bereshit to the situation that Am Yisrael is in at this time. If you remember, Avram and Yitzchak had great accomplishments. They made a name for God. Avram was known as Nasi Elohim Atah B'Tochenu. You're like a prince of God. Yitzchak was also able to build Mizbechot to call it in God's name like Avram Avinu did. They were known. They were prosperous. They didn't establish a nation because they were only single people, but they were known as representatives of God to the people of Canaan at that time. When it comes to the life of Yaakov, Yaakov is in trouble all the time. He's a fugitive early in his life. He has to run away. He was unable to establish a family in the way he had hoped. When he's leaving the land of Israel, and in his mind he thinks that all of his dreams might have been lost, God appears to him in a dream in Beit El and reminds him that you are indeed the chosen son, and even though you're leaving, one day I'm going to bring you back here. If you remember, in the beginning of Parsha Vayetzeh, Hinei Anochi Imach Ushmarticha B'chol Asher Telech Vashivoticha El Adama Azot. I'm going to be with you, I'm going to follow you, I'll take care of you, and I'll bring you back to this land. And finally, 20 years later, Yaakov Avinu returns to Eretz Canaan. And in Parshat Vayishlach, in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Tet, Chumash tells us how God appeared to Yaakov one more time when he returned from Padan Aram and blessed him. When he leaves Beit El, traveling south to meet his father Yitzchak to return home, Rachel gives birth to Binyamin, and that's where she dies, and there he puts up the matzeva of Kevar Rachel. This must have been a very difficult time in the life of Yaakov, because Yaakov had such high hopes. Yaakov was hoping to return to the land of Israel with his children, with his wives, with his family, especially with Rachel, who he saw as his primary wife. He had hoped to make a house for God. Maybe Yaakov is returning, and when he returns with his family, he'll finally be able to establish the people of Israel as God had promised Avram and Yitzchak. He was hoping that he'd be able to return and establish a nation that God had envisioned when he first chose Avram Avinu in Parshat Lech Lecha. Instead, Yaakov Avinu's life is full of tragedy, full of trouble. He's not able to fulfill his goal. He never is able to build a house for God. His life situation doesn't allow it. Disappearance of Yosef, and when Yosef is sold, that makes the rest of his life full of sorrow and depression. Yaakov is never able to fulfill that goal. But even though he himself in his life wasn't able to fulfill that goal, Yaakov establishes matzivot, both matzivah and Beit El, which will hopefully one day a marker to note where we're going to return to, what we're striving to make a house for God, to make a name for God. And the same way, when Rachel dies, he also puts a matzeva to remember the spot, to remember his dreams, to remember his aspirations. Those are all events which were very important in the life of Yaakov, which Chumash goes out of its way to record. Because if we look at the Avot, each of the Avot represents different time periods in Jewish history. Avram Avinu was the builder, the starter, the pioneer. Yitzchak does the same things that Avram does. He's a second generation. There's people who build a company, and there's people who keep it running. That's Yitzchak. And then there's Yaakov, who has the midah of what we call galut, or exile, but not just galut in exile, but survival in times of turmoil. Part of Jewish history is not only accomplishing, part of Jewish history is being able to maintain a goal, maintain an ideal, even though you can't fulfill it at a certain time. The Jewish nation have a goal, have an ideal, but not every time period in Jewish history allows us to fulfill that goal. If during those time periods we give up hope altogether, there will be no future. Yaakov Avinu has the ability, in time periods of trouble, when the goal cannot be accomplished, he still has the vision and the understanding of establishing a matzeva to make a marker, to make a statement that even though right now I can't fulfill my goal, one day that goal hopefully can be fulfilled. If we take the time period that we're in now in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where the people of Israel find themselves in a desperate situation, where the borders were shrinking, and they're having no influence on the nations around them. The country is full of corruption, no educational growth, no religious growth. And finally, things begin to move. Finally, we find Shmuel, who established himself as a proper type of a leader. And now we want to take that progression one step farther and begin to build the nation that Yaakov Avinu had dreamt about. The person who hopefully will now take that process to the next step will be a descendant of Binyamin, Shaul, from the tribe of Binyamin, who's going to be charged now by Shmuel to begin to bring redemption to the Jewish people. Therefore, those signs passing by Kever Rachel and meeting people there, even if it's by chance, but the fact that Navi says, you'll meet people by Kever Rachel, and then you go to Beit Elohim, and beforehand, Shmuel puts Shemen to anoint him, that you have potential to become this great leader. Those events bring the reader back to this concept of the choice of the Jewish people back in Sefer Bereshit.
That is also why it's so meaningful in Sefer Yirmiyahu, as we read on Rosh Hashanah, that when the Jewish people go into exile at the end of the first temple period, Yirmiyahu watches the exiles leaving Yerushalayim, walking from the destructions of the temple, walking north into exile, passing Gibat Elohim, and then passing Kever Rachel, the area of Kever Rachel. On the way, as they pass Beit El, Yirmiyahu from Anatot says, Kobra manishma, Rachel mevakal baneha, mini kolech mi bechi, veinaich mi dima, ki sachar lepulatech, num Hashem, v'shavu, banim l'gvulam. Yirmiyahu's promise is viewed through the story of Rachel. Yirmiyahu's promise that even in times of destruction, even in times of exile, Rachel crying about her children, the imagery of Rachel, and that sight of Rachel's burial place near Beit El will be a reminder that there's always hope for the Jewish people, no matter how difficult their situation may be.
Tragically enough, Shaul only partially fulfills that goal, and ultimately it will be David and his leadership character which will enable the Jewish people to reach that apex. But the stage of Shaul will be a very important one, and we'll continue our study of Shaul in the next year, where we will talk about the coronation of Shaul, the first time and the second time by Shmuel, as takes place in Perek Yud Aleph and Yud Bet.